This is an AMI podcast. This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Dave Brown, and this is a podcast version of AMI's Morning Show, now with Dave Brown. Catch the live broadcasts weekdays from 9 to 11 a.m. Eastern on AMI Audio and AMI TV. Welcome back to Now with Dave Brown on AMI. If you're a regular listener, you know what that music means. It's Friday, so we bring together our weekly news panel. Let's welcome into the show Megan Gilmore and Michelle McQuigg. Good morning, Megan. Oh, do we have Megan on mute? And we'll also say good morning to Michelle McQuigg. Hello, Michelle.
Good morning, friends. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm just going to make sure we do indeed have Megan here. Hello, Megan.
Hello, Dave.
There we go. Manners. We're all about diplomacy here on Now with Dave Brown. So we're going to talk about three topics today, and let's kick off our first one. As we approach the 13th month of a global pandemic, Ontario once again finds itself in a stay-at-home order, which means that once again remote learning finds itself in some focus. Parts of the province will still have students learning in person, while other regions have already shifted online. As more time has passed, more data is emerging about students who are being left behind by remote learning. And Megan, we've touched on remote learning a few times over the last year because it is an important topic, but you wanted us to revisit it again. Why?
Well, there's several reasons. And one of them is because I feel like our general social discussion about remote learning has changed over the course of this pandemic. If I can have you all think back to the before COVID days, I know it's hard, but apparently they existed. And some time in that bygone era, I think we even discussed on this news panel, there were proposals in Ontario to increase the amount of online education in high schools, and teachers were mad and unions were mad. Everybody was mad about the thought about this. And now, 13 months into this pandemic, like you said, online education has become a very normal part of discourse. In the last week here in Ontario, it's been a big topic of news, what school boards were moving to online education before the province imposed its latest stay-at-home order. So I think it's an interesting time just to revisit what our thoughts are about online education, and if it is true that it is now going to be part of the educational system in a more permanent way, what ramifications could there be for that, and what would need to change to actually make that beneficial?
Michelle, Megan rightfully addresses that online learning is something that we were discussing about quite a bit even before the pandemic hit, but the pandemic caused the necessity, a shift to online education in a lot of places. And it's fair to say that a lot of educators and a lot of students have had some negative feedback to share about the overall process, probably because there was potentially a lack of preparation, somewhat unacceptably so, going into a school year when a global pandemic was still going on. I think everybody, as I've said before, everybody gets a free pass last spring, but going into this year, being unprepared for these things is a bit more of a problem. But Michelle, has your perspective on online learning shifted at all over the course of the last year?
Well, yes and no. And I think part of the problem, I'm going to put on my annoying editor hat, so please bear with me here, but I feel like society as a whole needs a bit of a shake when they talk about online learning, because right now it's an umbrella term that captures so many different things that aren't directly comparable, in my estimation. So Megan's totally right. When teachers were up in arms prior to COVID, in fact, they were rolling strikes all across Ontario at the notion of so much as two mandatory e-courses being introduced to the curriculum. It started off as four. It became two. That was the stipulation. It's requiring a couple of courses for graduation, but the bulk of the learning would still be taken in person. Now, people talk about online learning largely in reference to an entire curriculum being forced to move online or being sort of joined in with some in-person learning. It's not really the same thing. Mm-hmm. And this is what frustrates me when it comes to this conversation, is that we're not really comparing apples and apples. And I don't think unless we do, any kind of productive headway can be made on this conversation. There was an interesting op-ed in the Globe talking about a vision for online as a supplement, a permanent supplement to in-person learning. So having some courses be available to be taken online, for instance, to enhance what's taking place in person, or to expand course offerings for schools that might not be able to make those classes available directly. That kind of vision for online learning, I definitely can get behind. But if we're talking about a wholesale switch and an abandonment of physical class and in-person schooling, then I'm going to have some more difficulty with it.
Yeah, Michelle, you rightly identify that education is a big, big, big tent, right? There's almost no similarities you can draw between online education for a student in grade one or kindergarten and a student who's in grade 12 or who's in college or university, right? There's absolutely no comparison between these two things. And that's one of the things that I evaluate about this year as well, that although there have been struggles rightfully identified in high school settings where teachers are, quote, losing track of students or students are falling behind and just not really engaging in their learning process because of the freedom that's been extended to them, you know, that's a 14, 15-year-old for you. You know, what are you going to do? Whereas it's totally understandable that a 6 or 7-year-old can't sit in front of a screen all day. Like, that's, I know 6 and 7-year-olds. I have family members. They can barely sit still for a couple minutes. It's the times that we live in. Megan, I want to bounce your own question back to you, though, here. How have your perceptions of online learning changed over the course of the last year?
I've never personally been a fan of online learning for myself, either when I was in university, like more than a decade ago. It was a requirement of my institution that we take an online course. And this course, the way it was designed, it was literally like the professor uploads PowerPoint slides and you are supposed to read them throughout the course of a week and participate in like an online discussion forum. So that was not my jam. And I didn't do a good job at actually creating a schedule for myself to do it. And then in the last actually few days, I've participated in more online learning platforms where it's a real-time thing, where you're engaged theoretically in real time with the content, and I'm not good at it. So for myself, I'm not a fan. I used to be pretty wholesale, like I think this is just a terrible idea on like every front. Now I'm a little more flexible to say like, okay, there are some situations and sometimes where if you do it properly with the right supports and it's content that is well matched for the method of instruction that you're choosing and you have good social supports, I think it can work. But I am much more in favor of in-person school. I think that is by far usually the most beneficial, especially for children.
Yeah, so I think along those lines, there's some conversations about lessons learned in regard to structure and how some education structures might change as a result of this pandemic, whether that be more private schools or smaller schools, homeschooling. Michelle, do you think there's some lessons learned? Again, bearing in mind that I take your point about the big broad tent and not having universal rules across age groups, but do you think there's some lessons that can be learned after a year of online education, or because perhaps it was executed poorly, it's hard to actually pull lessons away?
I'm sure there are. And I'm also sure that I'm not necessarily the best person to weigh in on them because we're still hearing about this.
And yeah, we're in the midst of it, right? This is ongoing.
Yeah, and that, not only that, but the online learning experience varies by board.
Yeah.
So there's so many variations at play. And I'm sure that out there are several boards who have managed to make a real success of it. And I think there'd be real appetite in learning from those boards and hearing from those who had this pandemic-related experiment go well, because I do think there is a place for this. One argument that I think has actually gained strength over the pandemic, advocates of online learning before COVID were saying that it was necessary to have at least a component of that be part of the curriculum for real-world preparation, that professional environments these days are going to be relying more on online learning, online management, however you want to call it, and this is a skill that students should have. I think that lesson has gained relevance, if anything, through the pandemic, probably adding fuel to the fire for those who want to integrate e-learning more dramatically. But this is where it is going to be tricky, because for all the boards that have done things right, we've heard so many horror stories about the way this has not only impacted kids, but whole families.
Mm-hmm.
So we'd have to see a lot of changes to, you know, working structures, to potentially transportation structures to enable parents to keep supporting kids, because we keep hearing this is something they need. Obviously, infrastructure and government funding of that infrastructure to allow better broadband access is going to be part of the mix. There's a lot of changes that have to happen if it's going to be adopted in an ideal format, whatever that may be. Yeah, like, there's just so many question marks.
Yeah, not to dump a ton of blame at the feet of politicians, but there are two politicians in particular, Premier François Legault and Premier Doug Ford, who, as I take you in the time machine back to last August, were adamant about the fact that online education was not going to be a component of this school year. And they were unwilling to even do the preparation to deal with that possibility. And yeah, no wonder your online education system isn't working in these times, because you didn't prepare even though you had time to do it. So that's me taking some maybe unfair shots at politicians. Megan, we have to kind of wrap up here, but what do you think we missed in this conversation that we unfortunately had to shorten a little bit?
I think we do need to continue the discussion about student engagement and which students will be able to learn in an online environment and which ones are going to have trouble doing so, whether that's because of their home situation or like different disabilities that they may have that are going to make online education in its how it's often administered really hard for them. And that's really real. Like you can't negate the fact that people have physical bodies and they live in physical real worlds that aren't digital. Not to say that what happens online isn't real, like it happens, but we still have bodies. We still have the physical environment that we need to consider. And then I think there is a really interesting discussion that needs to have about how does our changing methods of giving education force us to think about what is essential for students to learn? And how do you define what a good education is for somebody to be a productive member of society? And who gets to decide what is best for children?
And Michelle, that's where I'll come back to you here for a moment here as we talk about what goes on inside the walls of a school that isn't necessarily learning the ABCs or the 1-2-3s, but, you know, the activities and socialization that goes around with school. For example, I did a lot of theater and sports when I was in school. That gave me the opportunity to be engaged in my actual curriculums, because I knew if I got bad grades, I'd lose those extracurriculars. So when we think about what happens in the walls of a school, like sometimes that can be very difficult to replicate in an online sphere.
Absolutely. When I think of my own high school memories, and in my case, they're very fond. They're almost all of band practice, hanging with friends at lunch, ridiculous antics that may have taken place in class but weren't necessarily related to what we were learning that day. That kind of stuff, right? That's what memories are made of for me. And that was every bit as important as the actual education and the curriculum that I learned. So that is why I think I'm always going to be on team in-person learning overall, recognizing that for some, online has opened up a lot of opportunities. And I do think there is a place for it in an expanded or enhanced sort of capacity. But I would never want to see it become the de facto educational option.
Well, Megan, thank you for flagging this one for us to talk about again. It's education is such a significant topic, and it's one that we've seen an experiment happening in real time over the course of the last year. So I'm glad that we had a chance to revisit it here, and I'm sure we'll get a chance to revisit it again as well. Coming up next, Major League Baseball has moved its All-Star game from Atlanta due to new voting laws in Georgia. We'll discuss corporate social responsibility and where it intersects with politics. This is the Now News Panel on AMI. You've been listening to Now with Dave Brown. Hit the subscribe button on any podcast platform and leave us a rating and a review.